You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
All right, it's 10:30 a.m. time set for trial in State of Arizona versus Lori Daybell, CR 2021-001704. The parties are present, jury's not present. Are we ready to bring in the jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense ready to bring in the jury?
Lori.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead. All right, please be seated. The jury is present. The state may call its next witness.
The state will call Detective Nate Duncan.
All right, sir, go ahead and stand up here and be sworn in.
Please plug your name for the record. You can call me sworn in as in your back to be able to keep the truth, the whole truth, and that this will help you God.
Would you please introduce yourself to the jury?
Good morning. My name is Nathan Duncan. I'm a detective with the Chandler Police Department Robbery Homicide Unit.
How long have you worked for Chandler Police Department?
Well, I'm 2 months shy of 25 years.
Can you tell us the different areas you have worked?
Well, after graduating from the academy in September of 2000, I went into the patrol unit, for about three and a half years. I then left there and became a detective, working for approximately the next 11 years in our property crime section. And in the last 10 plus years, I've been working in the robbery homicide unit.
In your career, have you been asked to write search warrants to obtain and review cell phone records?
I have.
In your career, have you been asked to write and obtain search warrants for iCloud records?
Yes, I have.
And in your career, have you been asked to basically write search warrants for all different types of social media and digital media?
Yes.
On July 11th of 2019, were you working that day?
I was.
And what were your hours at that time?
During that time, so weekdays, days, and I believe at the time I was on a Tuesday through Friday schedule, 10-hour shifts.
So on Thursday, July 11th of 2019, did you learn of a shooting at 5531 South Four Peaks Place in Chandler?
I did.
How did you learn about it?
I actually had learned by listening to the radio. I heard the call kick out and of the shooting at the Four Peaks location. And then soon after that, received a phone call to assist detectives at that location.
When you arrived at the scene, what can you describe for us what you saw?
Yes, I believe I parked to the west of the location. When I arrived, I saw crime scene tape had already been placed. There were emergency vehicles such as fire vehicles and police present already. I then walked towards the front of the house where other detectives had gathered and spoke with them regarding the case, and then we were given tasks.
When you arrived, was Alex Cox still on scene, or did you see him?
I did see him from a distance. He was seated on the sidewalk. I did not get close to him and did not know who he was at the time.
When you arrived, do you know if Lori Vallow was there?
I never saw her.
When you arrived and you said you met with other detectives, were you given an assignment or task to do?
I was.
What was that?
I was asked to assist Detective Coons with the crime scene and basically be an extra set of eyes and hands for him when processing this crime scene.
Okay. So you're with Detective Coons. Was there also anyone else assisting you?
At some point, Detective Werther was there as well. And we had a patrol officer that was standing by helping us and also a crime scene investigator with us.
Okay. Before you can enter the house, did you obtain or did you have someone write a search warrant so you could go in the house?
Yes.
So does that mean you guys had to just kind of wait around for that to be approved?
Absolutely.
And then ultimately, did you enter the scene around 11:53 in the morning?
We did.
When you were helping to process this scene, you were not the case agent, right?
No, I was not.
Were you aware of the time of the 911, when the 911 call was placed?
I was aware at the time, at that particular moment, no, I was not.
Okay. Is that something you learned later?
Yes.
Did you include that in your report at some point?
I did.
Did you get the time correct in your report?
I did not.
Have you since verified through listening to the 911 call and looking at the CAD report of the time of that 911 call?
Yes, the correct time on the 911 call is 8:36 hours that I noticed through the 911 call and CAD in reviewing for this. And I did notice that in my supplemental report, I noted the wrong time of 8:32.
Okay. Were you aware of who made the 911 call?
I was.
And who was that?
Alex Cox.
So when you are finally allowed to enter the home, can you tell us what you observed when you first walked in?
Well, prior to walking in, we had a crime scene technician go through and take overall photographs of the entire residence. After that, we utilized the Lizard Q system to take additional photographs. Once that was complete, then we made entry in to kind of to make our own observations. The front door faces to the west of this home, and as you enter, there's a small foyer. Lula's white and black checkered flooring. And then you step into what I refer to as a great room that was had no furnishings. There was a mirror on the north wall, a large picture window on the east wall, a mirror on the south wall, and a mirror on the west wall. I noticed the body of the deceased, later identified as Charles Vallow, laying on the western portion of the room. He was in what we call the supine position, with his head to the north and his feet to the south, and his arms on each side of his body.
Okay. When you saw Charles Vallow, did he appear to be fit?
Yes.
When you went into the scene, did you notice a lot of blood around the scene?
We did not.
When you were looking at Charles Vallow, you told us that his hands were each to his sides, correct?
Correct.
Did you notice any blood on his left hand?
I did.
Where did you notice that?
I noticed some blood in the webbing, we call the webbing of Charles's left hand. And in seeing that blood, and with not seeing any other blood, the only source of blood for that to come in contact with would have been on Charles' chest. So I felt that that could have been from him placing his hand to his chest at one point before finally coming to rest.
So the flooring around where Charles's hand was, there was no blood around that floor area.
Correct.
I'm going to put up, if I can have the Elmo, exhibit 40. There we go. All right, so what we see here in Exhibit 40, when you arrive, fire had already gone in, done whatever treatment, and removed themselves from the residence, right?
Yes.
So you can still see some of their equipment attached to Charles, correct?
Correct.
And then what we're looking at here is his left hand.
Yeah, his left hand on top of his left thumb and on the side of his left index finger.
And I'm putting 41 up. Is that what you observed?
Yes.
So even around Mr. Vallow, did you notice a lot of pooling of blood around him?
I did not.
Did you notice more sort of after the medical examiner's office came and enrolled him and moved him around?
Yes.
You talked about mirrors in that room. Did you notice any cracks or damage to any of those mirrors?
I did not.
Did you see the bat in the room?
I did.
Was that on Charles's right or left side?
It was on his right side above his, more north of his head.
Okay. And when you are processing that room, are you looking for any potential blood evidence that's not just on or around Charles Vallow?
Yes, we are. We're constantly looking for any kind of blood evidence that would help us tell the story. Any kind of movement of somebody who had bled and then moved through the house to try to better explain what had happened.
So in this case, did you check that wood floor in that we'll call great room for any blood drops or spatters or smears that might be on the floor that wasn't like right under Charles?
Yes.
Did you find any?
No.
Did you go into the other rooms in the house and help search for any other blood evidence?
I did.
And did you note any blood drops or smears or anything else on the flooring or walls in any other rooms?
Not on the flooring or walls. The only other location of blood that was present would have been on the faucet of the kitchen sink.
And that was that small drop right on the faucet itself? Or
I would more smear, or I would call it a drop, but yeah, there was a red substance consistent with blood on that faucet.
Okay. Were you looking around the room for any towels or shirts or anything else that may have been used to, whether it was clean up or stop bleeding?
They were.
Did you find any?
No.
At some point, as you are going through the scene, did you go into what I'm going to call the pink room?
The pink room?
With the gun?
Yes, I did.
Put up my exhibit here. When you went into that room, were you, and I guess I can call it the pink as well as black and white striped room, exhibit 71. Did you observe this orange duffel bag, the garbage bag with some clothes, and then the gun laying on the floor next to the duffel bag?
I did.
Were you responsible for making that gun safe?
I was.
What did you do to make the gun safe?
So obviously, we, with help of our crime scene technician, we photograph the gun, the bag, and everything as it is in place. That's how we found it. At that point, I would place some gloves on and pick up the gun, also looking for any kind of blood or biological evidence on the gun while I'm looking at the gun. I would eventually do what's called making the gun safe. I would remove the magazine from the gun, set that aside, and then cycle the slide to remove any kind of cartridge that's inside of the chamber. In this case, this is a Springfield XD handgun. The magazine was released and removed. The cycle was manipulated, and a single 45 caliber cartridge fell out.
I'm going to move put up a couple. We see in 78 is sort of that your hand holding the magazine that you removed?
It is.
And then 86, is that your hand with the single casing?
Yes, it is.
Okay. When you were going through this evidence, was there inside that orange bag that we see in Exhibit 82 a gun case?
Yes.
Did that gun case have any locks on it?
It did not.
It's just plastic clasp to hold it closed?
Correct.
And was there extra magazines inside that gun case?
There were.
Now, when you process a scene, and the evidence is then taken to police impound, do you sometimes go through it better there away from the scene?
Yes.
I'm going to put up exhibit 81 here, that orange duffel bag. I think it's this way. Did you later go through the duffel bag?
I did.
And is there an outside pocket on that?
There is.
Did you locate a debit card in there?
I did.
If I can have my paralegal approach with 234. Do you recognize exhibit 234?
I do.
And what is that?
It's a health savings account card in the name of Alexander Cox.
Okay. State will move to admit exhibit 234.
Any objection?
I hear him. I'm thinking.
234 is admitted.
So, Alexander Cox, is that the name of the person who called 911?
Yes, it is.
And when you are, let me ask you a little bit about the gun a little more. So this gun that you made safe, when you're looking at it, did you look at all the sides of it to see if there was, again, any blood evidence on it?
Yes.
Did you see any?
I did not.
And that's something you are going to check to make sure you don't potentially change the way it looks?
Correct.
Did you know when you went in to process the scene that Alex Cox had an injury to the back of his head?
I don't know. When I went in, no, I did not.
Did you learn at some point that he did?
Yes.
Knowing that he had an injury to his head, did that play in? Well, let me ask you, when did you learn that?
I believe it was during the investigation. We learned that Alex had sustained an injury to his head. So with that made us more aware of potential other blood evidence, and that's why we were looking for that.
Okay. So is that why one of the reasons why you're looking on this gun to see if there was any blood transferred from him potentially touching his injury and manipulating the gun at some point?
Yes, from our understanding, it was there was some sort of assault with this, or assault with a bat, and then Alex then retrieved to the bedroom to get the gun. So our understanding is if you get hit with a bat and you're bleeding, that you would hopefully bring some sort of blood evidence onto the gun, and then what happens after there's more blood evidence as well.
So you would have documented that and then made sure it was collected if you'd seen that?
Absolutely.
But here we photographed the gun without any blood evidence on it?
Yes.
Do you also, when you obtain a gun, look at the serial number?
Yes.
Why is that relevant?
We want to know who it returns to, who owns that gun.
And did you determine who owned that gun?
We did.
Who owned the gun, the Exhibit 247, that Springfield?
Alex Cox.
Now, at some point, we've heard the medical examiner came to remove Charles Vallow's body, correct?
Yes.
And were you present when that happened?
I was.
And did you and the others that were processing the scene clean up the blood on the floor that had been left underneath him?
I did.
And when you were cleaning up the blood, did you notice anything on the floor that stood out to you where he had been located?
Yes, I did.
What did you notice?
When cleaning up the blood, I immediately noticed a defect in the floor consistent with a bullet strike that would have been close to or right on this area where the exit wound would have been on Charles' left shoulder.
So you had seen the floor and been processing that room while Charles was laying there, correct?
Right.
And once his body was removed, there's a pool of blood underneath where he was.
Correct.
And in that area, I'm going to put up Exhibit 60, is where you then observed that bullet strike.
That is correct.
I'm going to put up a little bit further back of one. Hold on. Let me put up 56. Although it's harder to see, the marker itself is next to where that bullet strike is?
Yes.
So when you are seeing this, what comes to your mind at that point?
Well, in this scene, we're trying to make sense of kind of what happened with limited information. We know we have two casings, and we know we have two projectiles. We have a projectile that's into the wall, and we also have a projectile that is near Charles' body. We believe, obviously, the first shot or a shot went through and through his body, causing two holes and entered into the wall. The other shot we have is a low left abdominal entry, and what we believe, and not confirmed until autopsy, but a upper left trajectory near his shoulder. We looked through the room to where this projectile could have exited throughout the room and then landed in that spot near where Charles was. And we did not see anything until his body was removed and the blood was cleaned up.
So you're looking like walls and trying to find any other location where the bullet may have struck and bounced back and ended up in the floor there.
Correct.
And you didn't find any defects or any holes or anything other than the one bullet that was in that baseboard.
Correct.
So when you see this now, did you feel that was consistent with the bullet striking the floor underneath Charles and him being on the floor when he was shot?
100%.
Because of that, did you end up actually cutting out and collecting that board?
We did.
And then you said that you were wanting to know if that was confirmed during an autopsy, correct?
Yes.
Did you attend the autopsy?
I did not.
Okay. During this initial investigation on July 11th of 2019, did you ever search Charles Vallow's rental car?
I did not.
So Lori Vallow had his car all day and nobody looked inside of it?
To the best of my knowledge, yes.
Initially, as a person who was just working the scene with Detective Kuntz, did that sort of end your investigation or your involvement for at least July 11th?
Yes.
What was your next involvement in this case?
My next involvement had some prior to June of 2020. Was June of 2020 is when I was assigned the status of case agent in this case. Prior to that, I did help Detective Moffitt with analyzing and just sorting through iCloud phone records and other data for him.
So we have heard about cell phones that had been extracted from retired Detective McDonald. That was Charles Vallow's cell phone. So
yes.
Was that one item of evidence that had been collected?
Yes.
Did you review any of that extracted data?
Yes, I did.
Did that those extractions include things from emails?
Yes.
Text messages?
Yes.
Sort of anything you might expect to see on anyone's smartphone?
Correct.
When you are looking through this, did you look through both Charles' iPhone extraction and later some iCloud account extractions?
I did.
What are iClouds?
The The best way to describe an iCloud is it's cloud storage for Apple products. If you have a MacBook or a phone or a Mac computer, and you use an iCloud email address, and then the information from all of those would be stored under one iCloud account.
So someone can intentionally store things there?
Yes, you can choose what you want to store in there. A lot of times there's a default on there, but you can go through and manipulate as to what you want saved in your cloud or backed up in your cloud.
So there can also be things, if a default is on, that are people may be not even aware that are being saved up there.
Correct.
I say up there as if it's really a cloud, but whatever. When you were reviewing this data, did you, without going into anything specifics, did you see interactions between Charles Vallow and Lori Vallow prior to about June 27th of 2019?
I did.
And did you see interactions with Charles Vallow and Lori Vallow after June 27th of 2019?
Yes.
Did you see a change in those interactions?
Definitely.
Did you learn from reviewing Charles Vallow's cell phone extraction and iCloud accounts that Charles had found an email sent to Chad Daybell that was purportedly written by him?
Yes, I did.
Did that involve an email address, kkwalker75 at Yahoo?
Yes, it did.
Did Charles Vallow, in fact, save a copy of that email into his account?
Yes, he did.
In reviewing Charles Vallow's cell phone extraction and iCloud account, prior to this time in June, had you seen any use of this kkwalker75 at yahoo.com email address? Prior to June 27th of 2019, had you seen Charles Vallow utilizing that email address?
Had I seen Charles utilize it? Sorry, no, I did not.
Okay. So even though you're going through his account, you're seeing emails by him, right?
Right.
And you're seeing emails that are saved into his own iCloud account.
Yes.
But nothing in there was saved prior to June of 27th of 2019 relating to kkwalker75 at yahoo.com.
That is correct.
Was the first time that you kind of became aware of this account when you saw that Charles had saved an email and then began texting Lori Vallow about it?
Yes.
Did you find multiple text messages or SMS messages from Charles Vallow to Lori Vallow relating to this letter?
Yes, I did.
Did you find evidence that Charles Vallow, after discovering this, email contacted Chad Daybell?
Yes.
Did you find evidence that after Charles Vallow found this KKWalker75 email address that Charles Vallow contacted Chad Daybell's wife, Tammy Daybell?
Yes.
Was a search warrant executed on Yahoo for that KKWalker75 at yahoo.com?
It was.
I can have my paralegal approach with 289. Does 289 include first an affidavit from Yahoo authenticating the KKWalker75 at yahoo.com account?
It does.
Does it include information for the subscriber?
It does.
And does it include a portion of the emails associated with that account?
Yes, it is.
When you looked at the subscriber information, what was the name of the person subscribing to this?
Karen Walker.
Did that person provide a phone number?
Yes, they did.
And so when they're subscribing to sign this up, is that often a requirement to provide some sort of phone number or way to authenticate these?
Yes.
Did you recognize that phone number?
I did.
How did you recognize it?
The phone number was linked to an old phone number for Lori Vallow.
Was that her 480 phone number?
Yeah, last ending in 4652.
Okay. So you had seen text messages from Lori Vallow to other family members and people under that phone number?
Correct.
In her iCloud account?
Correct.
Did you also know when that account was opened?
Yes, it was opened in April, get the exact date, April of 2019, April 21st.
April 21st of 2019. Would that have been when Lori Vallow and Charles Vallow were now in Houston?
Yes.
Did you also note in the context itself reference to requesting Chad Daybell come out to Houston?
I did.
The state will move to admit 289 pursuant to 803 and 902.
Any objection?
Relevance, Your Honor.
289 submitted.
If I may publish.
Go ahead.
So, zoom in a little closer for us. Is this the subscriber information that Yahoo sent? They send you an authentication, correct? And then they sent you subscriber information. Is that what you were looking at where you noted a phone number that you recognized as belonging to Lori Vallow?
Yes.
And again, this shows when the account was created on Sunday, April 21st?
Yes.
But the name associated was Karen Walker?
Correct.
Were you provided with a timeline of when this account was used?
I was.
So April 21st through June 26th?
Yes.
In looking at Charles Vallow's iCloud account and cell phone extraction, was this right before he discovered that email?
Yes.
Now, some of the emails that were sent starting sort of April 21st were to Brother Daybell, to Chad Daybell?
Yes.
And we see up here to Chad Daybell, correct?
Correct.
And then we see the date of Sunday, April 21st of 2019?
Yes.
And so in this email, do we see that Karen is inviting Brother Daybell to Houston?
Yes.
In these messages, was a final message one that you found saved by Charles Vallow on or around June 27th or 28th. This, what we see is exhibit again, 289.
Correct.
In this message, it's from the KK Walker email?
It is.
So these prior emails, we saw a person purporting to be Karen Walker using Lori Daybell's phone number, writing to Brother Daybell, right?
Yes.
But here we see someone again from this same email now purporting to be Charles Vallow?
Yes.
Again, talking about a Preparing the People conference?
Correct.
And had you heard of the Preparing the People conference before?
I had.
Is that something that Lori Vallow was involved in?
Yes.
And is that something we've heard about through testimony here at court?
We have.
In this, does Charles Vallow, or the person writing this email, again ask Chad Daybell to come out to visit?
Yes.
To help write a book?
Correct.
And so is this then the email that Charles then began reaching out to Lori, Chad, and Tammy about?
Yes.
We had heard from Adam that he also had learned of this. Did you see evidence of Charles Vallow also sending this letter that we see in 289 to Adam?
I did.
Based upon your review of the case and the dates on here, did Charles Vallow begin confronting Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell about the affair less than 2 weeks before he was killed?
He did.
And did you, in fact, see emails that Charles Vallow sent to Chad Daybell on June 29th and 30th?
I did.
And did you, in fact, see emails that Charles Vallow sent to Tammy Daybell on June 29th and June 30th of 2019?
I did.
At the time, on June 29th, 30th, where was Charles residing at that time?
During that time, Charles was in Houston, Texas.
During that time, where was Lori Vallow?
She was in Arizona.
We have this timeline where Charles Vallow begins reaching out to Lori and Chad and Chad's wife about this affair. Was the first time that Charles Vallow saw Lori Vallow after this, him discovering this email, on July 11th of 2019?
I believe so. There was a scheduled trip around the 4th of July, but was canceled. So the next time they would have seen each other would have been July 11th.
Okay. So based upon your review of SMS messages, iCloud accounts, did Charles help Lori move here to Arizona about a week before this email?
Yes.
So he had seen her prior to learning about this?
Correct.
And then when he came out here to see JJ?
Yes.
When you were reviewing, well, let me ask you this. Were search warrants executed to obtain not only Charles Vallow's iCloud accounts, but Lori Vallow's iCloud accounts?
Yes, they were.
Were there two different iCloud accounts that were that search warrants were executed on?
Yes.
Was one of them Lori for Style at iCloud.com?
It was.
And was the other one Lollytime at iCloud.com?
It was.
In reviewing those records, did you ever find evidence, screenshots of flights that Lori Vallow went to Idaho in March of 2019?
I did.
And did you ever find evidence, screenshots of flights that Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow flew back to Arizona together on March 19th of 2019?
I did.
Now, we heard from Adam Cox last week. When you, and he testified about text messages and interactions that he and Charles had leading up to July 11th. When you were going through the extractions of Charles Vallow's phone, did you see text messages between Charles Vallow and Adam Cox?
Yes.
And did those, match what we observed, and I'm going to put up 210 here that was previously admitted. Were these the messages that were previously admitted, Exhibit 210, the same ones you saw in Charles Vallow's phone?
Yes, they are.
Okay. When you were reviewing the text messages or SMS messages for July 11th of 2019, Do phones and the extractions advise when a message is received as well as when it's read?
It would show that, yes, in the Cellbrite report. Yes.
Okay. So, for instance, we see here a time and a read, correct?
Correct.
So when a message is incoming, it'll show when it's read.
Correct.
Obviously, when it's outgoing, we don't have that, correct?
Right.
So as you were looking at those messages on the cell phone extraction, did you see as Charles is arriving, he's sending messages to Adam?
Yes, that's correct.
And then he receives a message from Adam at 7:36:19?
Yes.
And he read that, I'm going to pull in just a little closer so we can see, at 7:36:27?
Yes.
So just a few seconds later.
Correct.
And then again, he gets that message from Adam, they're planning something. And did he, again, read that like simultaneously?
Yes.
And then did Charles send a message within a few seconds of reading that? Absolutely.
Correct.
And then again, this timing is just within seconds, like just ongoing conversation.
Yes.
Do we see that just a few seconds later, Adam sends a message to Charles? I was supposed to spend the night at the house last night. She probably blocked that.
Yes, I do.
And then again, another 20 seconds later, Charles sends Adam a message. What you do is up to you.
Yes.
Then we see that Adam sends a message back to Charles again within another 17 seconds or something. I'm going to put the pressure on, pressure to have him come get me now, see what he says. And that was read again. When?
12:13.
And again, did Adam send a second message? Where he says, okay, and when was that read?
12:13.
And then Adam sends another message now. So these first two were at 7:37:29 and 7:37:39?
Yes.
And those were not read like these other ones almost simultaneously, correct?
Correct.
So after Charles said, what you do is up to you, it doesn't appear that he is any longer reading those emails.
Correct.
Or text messages, I apologize. The last text message that Adam sent then at 7:49 and 34 seconds was, me and Zach are going to the Steak Center tonight at 8 to play basketball. Holmes is always there, either playing ball or interviewing people. I will try to catch him to have a conversation with my old friend, right?
Correct.
When was that read?
12:13 as well.
Is Charles Vallow alive at 12:13?
He is not.
So someone else is reading those?
Yes.
And this is coming from the extraction of Charles Vallow's phone?
Correct.
Do you know who was in possession of Charles Vallow's phone at 12:13 p.m. on July 11th of 2019?
Lori.
How do you know that?
She told us, and she turned the phone back over to us later that afternoon.
Did you ever find any other evidence that Lori Vallow and Alex Cox went through Charles Vallow's phone on July 11th of 2019?
Yes.
During this investigation, what we had already heard through Detective Werther, that a search warrant was executed on Alex Cox's Verizon cell phone, 480-351-9120. And were you familiar with those records?
I am.
As part of the records that Verizon sent, and this is Exhibit 222 that has previously been admitted, did Verizon provide subscriber information?
Yes.
And that came back to Alex Cox?
Correct.
Did Verizon provide phone calls?
Yes.
Cell phone data?
Yes.
Cell tower data?
Yes.
And did they also provide some images that were saved by Verizon for associated with this phone number for Alex Cox?
They did.
Is that something that is with every carrier?
No, it's hit or miss as to whether you get them or not. Some carriers save them for longer, some save for shorter periods of time. Some don't save them at all.
Were these images, did the images themselves have any type of time date stamp on them?
The image other than the self, it's an image of a phone with a time in the corner of the phone.
Okay. And it, so let me put up, I'm going to put up some of these images that were from this. So many of us talk about a screenshot, right? Is this a screenshot?
No.
Why not? How do we know it's not?
Because obviously in this case, you can actually see the entire phone and you also have a counter in the background.
So in this image that Verizon sent, it's showing an actual phone. Have you seen Charles Vallow's phone?
Yes.
Did it look like the same shape as his phone?
Yes.
We see a time of 2:13 p.m., correct?
Correct.
When you were going through Charles Vallow's phone itself and the extraction, did you see this message between Charles Vallow and Adam Cox?
I did.
Did, in fact, Charles place the flight or book a flight for Adam Cox to come to Phoenix?
He did.
Was there another image showing a closer up of the portion of that call with the flight information for Adam Cox?
Yes.
And did it also include a screenshot where Adam talks about going to see Lori at her house and having a talk with her and keeping his phone on record?
Yes.
And were these all messages, text messages, between Adam and Charles that you found on the extraction report?
They are.
And these are images that were saved by Verizon associated to Alex Cox's phone?
Yes.
So the Chandler Police Department had Charles's phone back in their possession by 3 or so in the afternoon of July 11th, correct?
Yes.
And it's been in Chandler Police Department's possession?
It has.
And yet the Verizon records for Alex Cox show photographs of Charles's phone and those conversations between Charles and Adam.
Yes.
Now, did you learn in this investigation whether or not Lori Vallow knew the PIN to enter Charles's phone?
I did.
And did she, in fact, provide that to Detective Inclan so that it was easy to get into Charles's phone?
Yes.
So on July 11th, Lori Vallow has Charles Vallow's phone, and she knows the PIN number to access it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's in her possession.
Correct.
Did you ever find evidence that Alex Cox sent those photos of Charles Vallow's phone showing Adam's flight reservations to Lori Vallow on July 13th of 2019?
I did.
Again, we're talking about those iCloud accounts. Did you find that when you were reviewing the lollytime@icloud.com account information?
Yes.
I can have my paralegal approach at 2:31. Thank you. I apologize. I should have also given you 226 as well. Do you recognize 236 there as the affidavit for the lolly time at iCloud.com account information?
I do.
When you were investigating this case and you obtained a search warrant for the lolly time at iCloud account, how did you authenticate or know that those records were related to Lori Vallow?
So first and foremost, the account lists her phone number in the 956, ending in 9562, associating that number with the account. Secondly, you can go through the content of the account, and you see contacts familiar with to Lori. You see text messages where she's texting and people are calling her by her name of Lori. You also have photographs and videos on the account that could all associate that account to Lori.
Did that lolly time at iCloud account even include photographs of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell's wedding?
It did.
Your Honor, the state will move to admit Exhibit 226, which is the affidavit, as well as Exhibit 231. The photographs.
Any objection?
Relevance, Your Honor.
All right. Give me the numbers again. 226, 231.
226 and 231.
226, 231 are admitted.
And if I may publish.
Go ahead.
So when we're talking about the iCloud account, are you able to kind of go through this extraction, what is provided to you by Apple, and look for things separated in terms of like emails or text messages or photographs?
Yes.
And then are you also able to then determine both sources and timestamps for some of those things?
You are, yes.
So looking at this report from the Apple iCloud account, do we see the lolly time at iCloud as a source?
Yes.
And then we see a timestamp over here of 7:13 at 5:57 p.m.?
Correct.
And then this, does that mean that's converted for Arizona time?
The UTC minus 7 mean it is Arizona time, yes.
Okay. And then we see from Alex Cox, the 9120 number, the one that we were talking about just recently, correct? So in this report, we see that there's three photographs that were sent.
Thumbnails of those, yes.
And then were those photographs also obtained or saved in the iCloud account?
Yes, they were.
And so again, showing those, were these the same three photographs that you had found in Alex Cox's Verizon records?
They are.
And looking at this, what day was Adam returning?
He was Sunday, July 14th.
So this message, this text message and photographs was sent on the 13th prior to Adam returning?
Yes.
Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about that timeline and what you understood when we start including all these this information in. Based upon your investigation, did you learn that Charles Vallow's phone left the area 5531 South Four Peaks Place around 7:49 a.m. on July 11th?
Yes, I did.
So what we see is it's around the time that Adam sent that last text message?
Correct.
Based upon the GPS data from Charles Vallow's cell phone, when she left with Charles's phone around 7:49 a.m., and the 911 call being received at 8:36 a.m., how much time lapsed?
17 minutes. What was the time?
From 7:49 to 8:36, was that 46?
47 minutes.
Okay. So if we have heard testimony from Dr. Bumgardner that Charles Vallow, when he was shot in the heart, would have taken up to a couple minutes to die after he was shot in the heart, and Lori Vallow has told Detective Inclan that she left right after Charles was shot, would that mean that Charles Vallow just lay dead on the floor for 45 minutes before Alex Cox called 911 at best?
Yes.
When you were looking at those Verizon cell phone records for Alex Cox, Exhibit 222, did you look at when and to whom Alex Cox called?
I did, yes.
Now, when you are looking at cell phone records, do they often include sort of dates and times of phone numbers, phone calls, durations, and those sorts of things?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to use the back of one of these here. So when we start looking at July 11th, is the first call that we see on Alex Cox's phone him making an outgoing call?
Yes.
And do we see who he calls?
Lori.
So this 480-692-9562 number is one of the phone numbers that you have obtained a search warrant for that was subscribed to Lori Vallow?
Correct.
And when did that occur?
7:52 a.m.
So Lori Vallow leaves the house at 7:49 with Charles's phone, and 3 minutes later, Alex calls her.
Yes.
And did that last for?
Under a minute, I believe.
Under a minute. 49 seconds.
Yes.
Did you look at the next call that Adam Cox made on July 11th?
I did.
Was that what we see here at 8:06 a.m.?
Yes, set for the UTC minus 7 is 8:06 a.m., and that lasted for 55 seconds.
Who
also
was that to?
Also placed to Lori.
So if Lori Vallow left the house at 7:49 with Charles Vallow's phone, how much time has lapsed when Alex calls her the second time? I know it's math. Is it about 17 minutes?
All right, 17 minutes, yeah.
Okay. And actually, I think we're... So at this point, has Alex called 911 yet at 8:06 a.m.?
At 8:06, he has not, no.
So at 8:06, Alex Cox calls Lori a second time, and Charles Vallow has now been laying on the floor for at least dead for at least 17 minutes.
Correct.
Understanding that the 911 call isn't made till 8:36, Alex Cox waits another 30 minutes before he calls 911?
Yes.
Did Lori Vallow ever call 911?
No.
Neither of her calls, neither of her phones?
None.
Not on Charles's phone?
No.
And do we in fact see the 911 call that was made by Alex Cox on these records?
Yes.
And it shows it as, these ones have not been converted, right?
Yeah, it's not converted, but the time converting that to the minus 7 would be 8:35:54 seconds.
So when we see the 911 call, that's the connection time with the dispatch was 8:36, basically.
Yes.
So we knew from Charles Vallow's phone and from body cam that Lori Vallow returns to 5531 South Four Peaks at about 8:48 a.m., correct?
Yes.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.